The Ural Mountains, Russia, the 2nd of February, 1959. Igor pushed his way through the snow, moving with slow, lurching steps. He could no longer feel the pain in his bare feet. He couldn't really feel anything at all anymore. The wind howled around him, roaring like some monstrous, invisible beast. It snatched at his thin clothes, threatening to blow him clean off the mountainside with its terrible fury. The night air was so cold that it tore at his throat with icy razors with each breath he took. Igor pressed on, shuffling, hunched over like a bent-backed old man 4 times his age. There was no moon on this night, so he waded through utter blackness, hopelessly lost in swirling clouds of wind-driven snow. He shielded his eyes with his hand, which had now become a numb, useless claw, trying desperately to spot the tiny pinprick of light that would lead him back to the tent, to warmth, to shelter, to safety. Igor screamed out the names of his friends. Rustam, Zinaida, Ludmila, and... God, he couldn't remember the rest. How strange. His thoughts were jumbled, vague and sluggish. Hypothermia, he thought. It was only a matter of time before his brain and other organs shut down completely. He called out again. His voice was snatched away by the wind, the desperate cries hurled aside the moment they left his lips. Hopeless. His friends could be only a few feet away from him in the darkness and they would never find each other. He was lost, utterly alone, slowly freezing to death. The Dead Mountain, a bite-sized fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. Igor couldn't quite piece together what had happened. The reason for them all being out here, stranded on the desolate mountainside. His mind was frustratingly foggy, his thoughts swimming blearily. He remembered awful screaming, utter chaos as he and his friends had scrambled from their sleeping bags, panicking bodies crashing around in the darkness. Someone had hacked the side of the tent open from the inside and they had all tumbled out into the snow. Then Igor had been running blindly through a raging storm, no shoes on his feet, wearing only his thermal underlayer. Air so bitterly cold it stole his breath away. Rustam and Zinaida had been with him for a brief moment, yelling with chaotic fear of something, before they were swallowed up by a roaring curtain of driving snow. Firelight in the dark trees, the burn of frostbitten toes, the cold and the darkness, and the unearthly roar of the wind. Igor took a few more staggering steps through the snow. Each time he tried to lift his feet was a little more difficult than the last. He was so desperately tired, and an aching weariness had soaked through down into his frozen bones. All he wanted to do was sleep, to curl up and wait until this whole hideous nightmare was over. The piled snowdrifts looked so soft and inviting. He could lie down. Rest, just for a moment. Get his strength back. No, to sleep was to die. Igor hugged himself, trying to rub some warmth back into his chest and arms. He realized that he had stopped shivering. His teeth no longer clattered in his head like dice in a cup. That wasn't a good sign. He tried to focus, peering into the swirling darkness that surrounded him. His heart gave a sudden leap. There, ahead, just visible through the billowing sheets of snow. A light, tiny, but burning warm and yellow in the blackness. The tent lamp. It swam like a mirage in Igor's watery vision. Tears froze on his cheeks, but he didn't notice. He stumbled forwards, faster now, tottering on clumsy, stiff legs. He would almost certainly lose all his toes to frostbite. Probably his feet as well. That was better than dying out here in the howling darkness. Igor blinked. Ice rasped on his eyelashes. The light was gone. He'd lost it in the blinding snow. He staggered around in a half circle, squinting, shielding his face with huge, swollen fingers. He took one painfully slow step forward. Then his legs buckled. Igor collapsed into the snow, the icy drifts swallowing him in their soft, deadly embrace. He tried to rise, but his limbs were useless, frozen lumps of flesh. He cried out for the others again. His voice was weak, lost at once in the moaning, pitiless wind. But it was okay, really. He would rest here, just for a moment. Then he would get up, reach the tent, and warm his poor, aching body. Then he would find his friends. He hoped that they were all right. Maybe they had already managed to find their way back to the tent, and weren't lost out here, alone in the freezing darkness like he was. Igor smiled to himself. Yes, that was likely what had happened. They were probably all together, warming tea on the stove, waiting for him to join them. That would be nice. But first, just a little sleep, just for a minute. Igor closed his eyes. In January 1959, a group of Russian hikers, led by 23-year-old engineering student Igor Dyatlov, set out on a skiing expedition through a remote area of the treacherous Ural Mountains. Every member of the group, which consisted of 8 men and 2 women, was a highly experienced outdoors person and hiker. Completing this arduous adventure would earn them all a Grade 3 hiker's certificate, the highest the Soviet Union had to offer at the time. A few days into the trek, one of Dyatlov's team, a young man named Yuri Yudin, who had been suffering from a heart condition and knee pain, decided to abandon the exercise and return to a nearby village. The rest of the group pressed on boldly into the jagged mountain peaks. They were never seen alive again. When Dyatlov failed to report back to his sports club on the 12th of February, there was no immediate panic. Such difficult expeditions could be expected to overrun by a day or so. A week later, distressed family members of the missing hikers demanded action. A search team of volunteer students and teachers from the Ural Polytechnic University was formed and set off into the wilderness, heading for the last known location of Dyatlov and his team. On the 26th of February, 1959, the search party made a chilling discovery. First, they stumbled upon the group's tent, pitched haphazardly on the slopes between 2 mountain peaks, off to the west of Dyatlov's intended route. The tent was half collapsed, covered in snow, and had been cut open from the inside. All of the group's belongings had been left abandoned, including their boots, warm clothing, food, and cooking supplies. Stranger still, 9 sets of footprints led away from the crumpled tent, left by people wearing either 1 shoe or just socks. Some of the tracks in the snow showed a few of the hikers had run out into the cold, completely barefoot. The search party followed the tracks down into the pass. On the edge of a snow-covered pine forest, they found the remains of a small fire, and a few meters further on, 2 frozen corpses. Yuri Krivonoshenko and Yuri Doroshenko lay curled together in the snow, dressed only in their socks and underwear. Their skin was mottled purplish-brown, their fingers and noses blackened with aggressive frostbite. The horrified search team moved back up the mountainside. Here, in the sweeping ridges of snow, they found the ice-hard bodies of Rustam Slobodin, Zinaida Kolmogorova, and the group leader, Igor Dyatlov. It appeared as though they had been trying to find their way back to the tent, and one by one succumbed to the terrible cold, collapsing into the snow and dying of hypothermia. It also seemed that they had scavenged additional clothing from the 2 corpses back in the forest, but they had only 1 shoe between them, a single boot worn by Rustam. It took over 2 months for the search party to find the 4 remaining hikers. On the 4th of May, local trackers discovered a den of sorts, buried a few meters under the snow. It seemed that some of Dyatlov's team had lived long enough to make a rough shelter, even constructing beds out of cut branches to keep their bodies off the frozen ground. A short while later, The last four hikers were found in a small ravine, less than 100 meters from the tree line where the first two corpses had been discovered. It was here that the investigation took another mysterious and gruesome turn. Ludmila Dubinina was found pressed face first against a large rock. Her eyes, nose, lips, and tongue were all missing, leaving behind a grotesque, grinning skull. It was later ruled that she had not died from hypothermia, but from massive internal bleeding, caused by severe trauma to her chest. She had 10 broken ribs. A few meters away, Semyon Zolotaryov and Alexander Kolevatov lay in an eternal, icy embrace, face down in a small stream. It appeared as though Alexander had frozen to death trying to provide some body heat to keep his friend alive. Flesh was missing from his face, exposing the bone beneath his grey-green skin. Semyon Zolotaryov's chest had been crushed in a similar way to Ludmilla's, which had been the cause of his death, rather than exposure to the cold. Both his eyes were also missing. A few meters further downstream, the search party found the final member of the doomed expedition. Nikolai Thibault Brignol was the most warmly dressed of the hikers, bundled up in numerous layers along with two hats, gloves, and felt boots. He had not died from the cold. His skull was smashed, with a massive fracture on the right side of his head. No amount of winter gear could have saved him from such a catastrophic injury. The bodies were prized from the snow and airlifted to the nearest medical facility for autopsy. The baffling mystery that became known as the Dyatlov Pass incident had only just begun. The main question that still puzzles investigators to this day is what could have caused these 9 hikers, all highly trained and experienced mountaineers, to abandon their perfectly serviceable tent in the middle of the night and charge out, shoeless, into the deadly cold. The original and perhaps most prominent theory is that the group was scared by a small avalanche. Terrified of being smothered alive inside the tent, they had cut their way out and fled into the darkness, became disorientated, and slowly froze to death trying to find their way back. But while the investigators searched for answers, they unearthed only more questions. If there had been an avalanche, wouldn't there be evidence? Wouldn't the tent be buried under piles of snow? Why did some of the corpses appear to be burnt in odd patches? And why did most of the hikers have wounds on their hands and bodies consistent with having been in a physical fight? When the final 4 corpses were found in the ravine, their crushed bones and missing body parts gave rise to a host of far more intriguing theories. The coroner's report stated that the injuries suffered by Dubinina, Zolotaryov, and Thibault Brignol were caused by an immense force, similar to the impact of a car crash. However, there were no external wounds to the fractures, more akin to the damage suffered by being caught in the shockwave of a bomb blast. It has been speculated that the unfortunate hikers had accidentally wandered into a secret military testing ground. The unexpected, deafening explosions from some experimental weaponry could have created panic within the group, causing them to flee their tent. Those that did not freeze to death had their bones broken and organs crushed by the pressure of the explosions. Some weapons, such as parachute mines, explode above the ground, so would not have left craters in the snow for the search party to find. This theory is supported by the reports of strange lights being seen over the Ural Mountains on the night of February the 2nd, possibly military flares or the illuminations of bomb blasts. However, the sightings of odd, unsettling lights over Dyatlov's Pass were not limited to that single night. The local indigenous people, the Mansi, have stories of fiery orbs dancing over the mountaintops that date back centuries. One of the expedition members, Zolotaryov, was found clutching a camera in his blackened, frozen fingers. When the film was developed, it revealed a series of photographs seeming to show huge, bright lights in the night sky. Though blurry and indistinct, these mysterious images, coupled with an odd pattern of burn marks reportedly seen on the trees in the nearby forest, fueled speculation that the Dyatlov team may have been visited by hostile UFOs in the middle of that raging storm. The strange wounds found on many of the bodies have led some to believe the hikers were forced from their tent and murdered by a malevolent external force. Suggestions range from violent escaped prisoners from a nearby gulag to Soviet special forces tasked with eliminating the group after they witnessed secret military testing or shady experimentations. Some wilder theories claim several of the hikers were actually KGB agents killed whilst out on a mission to find CIA spies supposedly hiding in the mountains. The devastating force used to crush the bones of some of the hikers, along with their eerily missing body parts, have led some to theorize that Dyatlov's team may have been attacked by a Yeti, a monstrous, ape-like creature rumored to stalk the mountains of Siberia and Asia, very similar to the American legend of Bigfoot. Suspicion also fell on the local indigenous Mansi people. Rumors swirled that the doomed expedition team may have accidentally trespassed on sacred land. The tribal warriors butchered them in revenge, smashing some to death with rocks and fists, and leaving the rest to perish in the cruel winter night. 20 years earlier, a rumor had circulated that a Russian geologist had been drowned in a lake by the Mansi as punishment for entering their forbidden lands. In line with this, one sensational tale suggests that the hikers were actually a Soviet research team on a mission to find the Zolotaya Baba, a legendary golden idol hidden in the mountains and worshipped by the indigenous people of the Urals. This statue, depicting a mother holding a small child, is said to be the source of great knowledge and power passed to the Mansi by a lost civilization. It is rumored that the German army were ordered to search for the Zolotaya Baba during their invasion of Russia in World War II, but found nothing. Dyatlov's team apparently located this mystical artifact, with Dubonina and Zolotaryov actually seeing and handling it. They suffered the most horrific injuries at the hands of the enraged Mansi people, with their eyes and tongues ripped out in retribution for defiling the sacred Zolotaya Baba. There are dozens of theories about what happened to Dyatlov's doomed expedition, but few offer satisfactory answers as to what made them leave the tent in such panic in the first place. However, there is one that provides a natural explanation, perhaps more disturbing than any talk of UFOs or merciless government kill squads. Igor awoke to the screaming of his friends. The second his eyes opened, he was engulfed by a wave of terrible dread. He felt sick. He wanted to vomit and cry and scream, but most of all, he wanted to run far away from... Well, he didn't know, but far from here. Bodies flailed in the cramped, claustrophobic darkness of the tent. Igor tried to rise, but was knocked back down in the chaos. The nauseating dread overwhelmed him. He clawed his way out of his sleeping bag, yelling incoherently, throwing wild punches, tears of fear running down his face. No time to head for the door, Igor grabbed his knife and plunged it into the heavy canvas wall of the tent, ripping open a long, ragged hole. Icy wind blasted in, hurling great fistfuls of snow into his face, but Igor didn't care. He stumbled out into the inky, stormy blackness, dimly aware of the others desperately forcing their way past him. The cold was staggering. It snatched Igor's breath away. His feet and hands were already burning with the first tingles of frostbite. The wind roared around him, howling and shrieking with a monstrous banshee wail. But beneath that was something else. A low, ominous thrumming that squeezed at Igor's skull. He couldn't hear it exactly, but he knew it was there. It rattled in his chest, made his organs quiver. Fear swallowed him completely. He turned his face into the storm and ran for his life. When fierce winds flow over a domed mountain peak with sufficient force, they can become warped, creating a stream of violent, localized tornadoes. This phenomenon, known as a Kármán vortex street, also produces high levels of infrasound. This is too low for the human ear to hear, but the effects can be felt all the same. It is said to cause feelings of nausea and crippling anxiety, create breathing difficulties and, in some cases, intense, blinding fear, an unplaceable sense of doom and dread. It has been theorized that such storm-borne infrasound may have induced terrible panic in the sleeping hikers. Compounded by the claustrophobic darkness of their tent, it drove them briefly to madness, causing them to flee into the mountain wilderness. By the time they regained their senses, it was too late. Some froze whilst trying to find their way back to the tent. Others plunged to their deaths in snowy ravines, obscured by the darkness. What do you think? Was it an avalanche, or deadly winds that forced these doomed adventurers to their icy deaths? Or something a little more sinister? Vengeful locals, extraterrestrials, or perhaps even a monstrous yeti, hungry for human tongues? We will never know for certain. But the legend of the Dead Mountain lives on. To this day, it is said that no exploration team or local hunting party will travel in groups of nine through Dyatlov's Pass, so that nobody matches the unlucky number of that ill-fated expedition. We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about this mountainous mystery. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PixelElixir, or subscribe at BitesizedFrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.